I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. The Pennsylvania House debated a bill on Monday that, if passed, would be a first step in privatizing the sale of wine and liquor in the state. And if it makes it through the Senate, a big if, and is signed by Governor Corbett, it would dramatically change a system that's been in place since 1933. House Majority Leader Mike Terzai is the author of that bill. It would auction off the state's 600-plus wine and liquor stores and give beer distributors a chance to buy the first 1,050 licenses. We hope to speak with Mike Terzai during this hour, but we want to hear from you. Should Pennsylvania privatize the sale of wine and liquor? Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We begin our conversation with John Micek. He's the state house reporter for the Allentown Morning Call, writes the paper's Capital Ideas blog. And John, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
I know there was a debate on Monday in the House, nothing yesterday. What's the significance of that?
Well, we were all sort of in a holding pattern here in the Capitol yesterday, waiting to see if Majority Leader Mike Terzai was going to bring the liquor bill back up. The fact that he did not was fairly telling. I mean, he's been having trouble holding his own caucus on this. A half dozen or so Bucks County Republicans are facing some pressure from the beer distributors industry, which is not a big fan of this bill. Yeah, social conservatives are an issue as well. So, you know, the fact that he wasn't able to bring the bill up last night suggests that Mr. Terzai is having trouble holding his own caucus on this, and that's not even to mention the Democrats he's going to need to get this bill over the transom.
And I should say that we had hoped to begin our conversation with Mike Terzai, and we do hope that he joins us sometime later this hour. But, John, let me quote something from the Associated Press. Senate President Joe Scarnati is co-sponsoring a bill that would allow thousands of taverns, restaurants, and other establishments licensed to sell glasses of wine and spirits to buy a special license to sell those products by the bottle as well. The bill would leave the 620 state stores open and preserve the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board. What's the significance of this bill being co-sponsored?
No, Senator Scarnati has never been a fan of the liquor privatization measure. Last year, when this was beginning to bubble up, he called a bunch of us into his Capitol office to talk about it, and he said, "Well, you know, maybe we need to give the liquor store system a chance to modernize, to update itself, to act more like a business before we rush headlong into privatization." The bill I think you're talking about is sponsored by Senator Chuck McElhaney out of Bucks County. Earlier this week, Senator Scarnati jumped onto Twitter and said, "Hey, I'm really looking forward to debating this measure this fall, effectively taking it off the table for the spring." So this sounds like, you know, another attempt by the Senate to slow this down.
Now, Governor Corbett campaigned on a promise of privatizing the state's liquor sales system. What's the role that the governor's playing?
From what we understand, he's actually been fairly active on this issue. On Monday, his new chief of staff, Steve Achel, was reaching out to Democrats, we understand, trying to get them on side on this. Asked about it publicly, the governor declined to comment on his strategy. But we know the governor supports full privatization of the system and that this is a goal of his. So it's not surprising that he is trying to get the votes that are needed for it.
But he did just sign a 4-year contract with the union employees.
That's right. Local 1776 of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, which represents about 3,500 state store employees, inked a 4-year deal last week that'll take them through the middle of 2015. There's some language in there that says, if the system is privatized, then new operators have to pick up these union workers. The governor was on Philadelphia radio last week saying, that he didn't agree with the union's interpretation of this, that there's no way that you can hold a private employer liable for agreements that are made with a public entity after that public entity ceases to exist. I'm sure this will all be the subject of litigation should it ever come to pass.
And I should say that Wendell Young, the union leader, will be joining us later in the hour. I'm sure he'll want to weigh in on this as well.
Plenty to say as well.
And talking with John Micek about plans we've been here before, John, plans in Pennsylvania to privatize the sale of wine and liquor in the state. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We had hoped to speak with Jay Wiederhold, the president of the Pennsylvania Beer Alliance. He's unable to join us. But, John, why is the Beer Alliance opposed to the Mike Terzai bill? Because it does give them, in a sense, first dibs on the first 1,000 licenses. What's the problem there?
Yeah, they're not fans of grocery stores being allowed in on this. Wegmans and Sheetz, the massive gas station convenience store chain, just to name two, now have a class of license that allows them to sell six packs. This bill would the bill that Mr. Terzai is pursuing would actually allow beer distributors to sell six packs as well. But they have never been fans of grocery stores horning in on their. On their action. They've had this market cornered for some years now, and the idea of them of saying, you know, being able to stop at Wegmans or Giant or wherever to pick up a six-pack on the way home, they're not real fans of.
Right. But if this were to pass, and I realize that's a gigantic if, though, it would give beer distributors at least a chance to sell wine and liquor. I mean, providing a one-stop shopping for customers.
That's correct. I mean, that's the idea here. Mr. Terzai actually used that very construction, a one-stop shop, pretty well in every corner of the state. And you know, there is language in the bill that would keep grocery stores out of the wine and spirit business for something like 10 years after enactment, or 5 or 10 years after enactment. So it's not an immediate threat, but we're talking about a lot of money here.
Yeah. And does anyone know what these licenses would go for? I guess it would vary depending on what part of the state.
Those are market conditions. I mean, you hear about liquor licenses going for $50,000 in some parts of the states. I mean, there's quite a lot of money tied up here. And you know, there's some concerns from Democrats, legislative Democrats, that in effect you'd be swapping a state-run monopoly for a privately run monopoly. That's some gigantic mega chain like Wine City, I think it's called, in other states, or Walmart, or whomever would come in and scoop up all of these licenses, and then you'd be swapping, one for another.
How much money does the state government make through the sale, the wholesale and retail sale of wine and liquor?
That is, it's been a while since I've looked at those numbers, but I think the profit is somewhere in the neighborhood of like $500 million. A year. They do into the billions in sales, but what they return, what they make in actual profit is around $400 million, I think. And they're saying that, from the upfront sale, there's these numbers are in upfront proceeds from an auction of the licenses that you get anywhere from $1 billion all the way up to $2 billion, depending on whose numbers you believe at any one time.
And why are those numbers so questionable?
There's been a ton of studies, and it's based on the number of licenses. It's based on the prices at auction. There's all these sort of economic models based on that they've looked at to determine these numbers.
Let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. John Micek doing some pinch hitting for us today on Radio Time. State House reporter for the Allentown Morning Call. He writes the paper's Capital Ideas blog and he's someone that we do call up when we talk about anything related to Pennsylvania politics. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499 talking about whether or if Pennsylvania will be privatizing the sale of wine and liquor. We'd like to know what you think about that idea. 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Daniel from Norristown to join us. And Daniel, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm fully in favor of privatizing the alcohol sales in Pennsylvania. I know when I used to manage restaurant, the prices that restaurants and bars have to pay Pennsylvania for the alcohol that they sell is so high that in order to capitalize, in order to make profit on it, the prices that they end up having to charge to consumers ends up having to be higher. I know from research that I've done in the past that Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board is one of the largest alcohol purchasers worldwide. you take like all the major cruise lines and everything, for single purchases of alcohol, Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board is humongous. So you know that they're getting a huge discount on their alcohol, yet the prices that the consumers end up having to pay, it doesn't reflect that discount at all. And I really think that privatizing this would be a huge benefit to Pennsylvania consumers. And I'll take my answer off air. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, Daniel. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. John, I've heard this argument before.
Yeah, I really can't speak to sort of the restaurant end of it, but you know, Pennsylvania taxes the retail sales of wine and spirits at 24%, 6% for the state sales tax, or 7% if you're in Philadelphia or Allegheny County, and then the 18% so-called Johnstown flood tax, which has been on the books since the Depression era. There's also, I think, an automatic markup that the system does when they purchase wine and spirits. And one of the things the Liquor Control Board has been pleading for a little while now is variable pricing. I think they have to charge, I forget the exact argument here, but they say they don't have enough flexibility in what they can charge for different items. They've been seeking that authorization from the legislature, and they argue that would, you know, allowing them to do that would be a better deal for consumers.
And we should just spend a moment talking about the Johnstown flood tax, because that goes back decades, John.
It goes back to the 1930s when the city, as the name suggests, the city of Johnstown was, in fact, flooded. To the best of my knowledge, Johnstown is no longer underwater, but the tax is still with us, sort of a demonstration of how hard it is once you get a tax on the books to get rid of it, particularly when it's a cash cow for the state.
And something like, I was reading something like $273 million a year from the Johnstown flood tax. Does that sound about right?
That sounds about right.
Now, Terzai, and I realize that these are big ifs here because there's a lot that's still up in the air, but he is talking about if his bill were to pass and get signed by the governor, would get rid of that Johnstown sales tax, or flood tax, I should say, and replace it with a gallonage tax. Can you explain that, John?
I hope so. it's based on the size of the container. So the tax would be levied according to the sort of the milliliters or however it is they measure the size of alcohol bottles, and be sort of on a sliding scale accordingly. There were Democrats on the House floor on Monday night when all this was happening who argued that, you know, that would in fact result in a tax increase for consumers, which would be a problem for some House Republicans who have signed the now infamous no tax hike pledge sponsored by Americans for Tax Reform.
Which would be the governor.
That would be the governor just for one, yes.
And has there been a lot of hubbub in Harrisburg this week with all this talk about privatization?
It's kind of funny. It's one issue among the many that are swirling this week. It is certainly the most high profile of the bunch. You have this happening against the backdrop of budget negotiations and shuttle diplomacy between legislative leaders and the Corbett administration as they try to meet the June 30th deadline to have a new budget in place. Certainly, it's the most visible issue. If you walk down to the Capitol Rotunda on any given afternoon, you will find yellow T-shirted members of the UFCW union who are down there. People are certainly paying attention.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation, talking with John Micek in this hour of Radio Times, talking about the fact that Pennsylvania is once again debating the issue of privatizing the sale of wine and liquor in the state. Pennsylvania and Utah, the only states where the state government controls the wholesale and retail sale of wine and liquor. And John writes the State House reporter for the Allentown Morning Call, writes the paper's Capital Ideas blog. And we want to hear from you, where you stand on this issue. 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Greensgrow Farm supports WHYY. The Greensgrow Camden Mobile Markets are open Thursdays and Fridays in 8 Camden neighborhood locations. Full details at greensgrow.org/Camden.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. Its magical images have delighted generations. In a concert for families, Yannick Nezet-Séguin leads the Philadelphia Orchestra in scenes from Disney's Fantasia, accompanied by the iconic film and original animated scenes on a giant screen. Mickey Mouse and the Sorcerer's Apprentice, Waltzing Flowers, and more. It's all part of the Stokowski Celebration. Tickets online or 215-893-1999. Saturday, June 23rd at the Academy of Music, Disney's Fantasia in concert.
Hey, I'm Jad.
I'm Robert.
We make the show Radiolab.
Which is mostly a show just for your ears.
But not anymore. Because coming soon to the Kimmel Center's Academy of Music...
A very different kind of Radiolab.
Yeah, eyeballs dancing.
Astronauts sizzling.
Holy cow.
Blind men yelling.
Sultan, you are trying to impose a visual totalitarianism upon the human brain.
Join us for Radiolab Live June 29th. Details are at radiolab.org/inthedark.
The Chester County Hospital supports WHYY, an affiliate of the Penn Cancer Network. They offer access to complex treatment options, clinical trials, a multidisciplinary team approach to care, and helpful nurse navigators. ChesterCountyHospital.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. Pennsylvania's system of selling wine and liquor dates back to the 1930s. There have been a number of attempts to privatize the system over the decades. All of them have failed. It's an issue that is being or was debated on Monday in the State House, a bill by Mike Terzai to auction off the state's 600-plus wine and liquor stores, give beer distributors a chance to buy in. And we had hoped to speak with Mike Terzai. We understand he's talking with the governor, and so far we have not been able to book him. But we do have John Misick with us, State House reporter for the Allentown Morning Call, writes the paper's Capital Ideas blog. We want to know where you stand on privatization, pro or con. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. John, it's interesting when you look at the opponents of privatization, you have, at least on the more conservative side, you have people that are just concerned they don't want people drinking so much, and they want the government to essentially control people's behavior that way. And then, of course, you've got on the more sort of liberal democratic side the unions who are opposed to privatization as well.
And that's why this has always been such a heavy lift. It's been a longstanding and potent coalition that stood in the way of this, going all the way back to the administration of former Governor Dick Thornburgh. You're exactly right, Marty. You have social conservatives on the one side of this who say that if you privatize the alcohol system, take it out from under the aegis of the state, that you're going to see more drunken driving arrests, you're going to see more teen alcohol abuse. The statistics, depending on whom you talk to, kind of vary on that. And on the other side, you have Democrats who are saying you're going to lose well-paying, unionized jobs at a time when the economy can least afford to do that.
And Mike Terzai is the House Majority Leader. What kind of clout does he have in the legislature?
He's the majority leader, so it's his sandbox. He's the most powerful Republican in the state house. But even on an issue like this, and when he has a this is part of the problem of having a caucus that is so large. The Republicans won big in 2010 and had 112 votes. But the problem is that when you have that many people, it can be awfully hard to keep everybody on the reservation at all times. So when you're going for an issue that's as fractious as this, and you have such a broad range of opinion, and not only do you have social conservatives who are kind of wandering on this, but you also have some southeastern Republicans who are getting some pressure on this from the beer industry, it can be very hard to keep your caucus together and marshal all the votes that you need.
And does he use carrots and sticks, or how do you keep a fractious coalition together, or don't you?
You hope quite a lot, and it's kind of funny if you stand outside Republican caucus meetings on the first floor of the state capitol. You'll occasionally see senior Republicans coming out with somebody and whispering to them very intensely and holding them by the arm and gesticulating and then leading them back inside, and that's when you know that they're trying very hard to round up the votes for something. So there is, it's some carrot and some stick. Mr. Terzai is not a fan of the state's RCAP system, WHAMs, where you sort of fire hose money onto lawmakers to get their votes. But fact of the matter is somebody has to get something in order to give something, and that's the way this place works.
Let me get Maureen from Doylestown to join our conversation. And Maureen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, hi
there.
I just wanted to say I think I'm against privatizing because I just really believe that right now our wine and liquor stores look real nice. They're inside shopping centers typically. They don't have all those ratty-tatty signs and neon signs in the window. Once you privatize it, we're going to start looking like New Jersey with all of these liquor stores here, there, and everywhere that never really look very well maintained. I mean, you got to really consider that, and I don't think people do.
Well,
on top of it, how much wine? People say they need more choices. Really? There's hundreds of bottles of wine in there.
Where do you buy your liquor? Because you're saying that your store is not a ratty tatty looking liquor store.
No, I don't think most of them are. I mean, when you're in Pennsylvania, you have wine and spirit stores that are a lot of times right inside a shopping center.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. I think there are people, myself included, that would have a different opinion. But let me see if John Micek wants to respond to that. And John, as you were saying, there have been attempts over the last couple of years to not privatize, but certainly modernize the system to some degree.
That's true. And, you know, if you talk to Joe Conte, the former state senator from Bucks County, who's now the CEO of the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board, they'll tell you, you know, they've really made efforts to sort of gussy up the stores to make the retail experience more friendly and more enjoyable for consumers. They took out a contract, I don't know, a couple of years back, $500,000 where they basically sent their employees for niceness training to, you know, because the longstanding reputation of the system was it was kind of Soviet, and if you went in there, you know, you'd be barked at, and the consumer experience wasn't that great. I was just, in fact, buying some wine over the weekend for some family who are coming in, and, you know, was standing in line at my local, and the guy behind the counter was almost supernaturally cheerful. So apparently those lessons are being communicated. I guess there's nothing like a little bit of self-preservation to improve the experience.
Indeed. Does anyone know how much money the state loses to bordering states? There's a phrase called border bleed. You know, people go to Delaware or New Jersey or Maryland or other states to buy their liquor from Pennsylvania. Does anyone know how much is lost there? I realize it's, you know, more sort of under the, not the cover of night, but certainly it's a much more informal process.
I've heard of that number. I don't have it at my fingertips right now. But, I mean, you know, in floor debate on Monday, Representative Thomas Killian, who's a Republican from Delaware County, in fact, talked about his neighbors who, you know, scamper across the border into Delaware at risk by being stopped by the state troopers who are sometimes parked at the border to check cars as they're coming out of these border liquor stores. Because, you know, if you go across there, you're not paying Pennsylvania taxes, which is technically illegal. So there is some amount of money. Unfortunately, I don't have that figure at hand at the moment. There is some amount of money, though, that is lost to these out-of-state sales.
Let me get, looks like Bruce from Percocet to join our conversation. And, Bruce, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning, John and Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I am officially ambivalent on this issue. I can tell you the answer to that last question is as much money as I can spend when I go through Maryland or Delaware. And I'm sorry, you can easily have hundreds of bottles of wine and have a terrible selection. And I am not at all concerned with 16-year-olds drinking $30 bottles of Cabernet, you know? And I'm exhausted with being embarrassed as friends come from out of state and try to stop at the supermarket to get, you know, a bottle of wine or a six-pack and come up frustrated. I would love to buy my wine and cheese in the same place. Okay. All that having been said, however, I'm specifically concerned that I'm wrong, that it's fine. I can get anything I need in service to having underage fatalities and, you know, harm occur. And as I thought I had heard that Pennsylvania was about the lowest state in that regard, in alcohol-related deaths and injuries for people underage. So I'm very concerned about that.
Well, I hear that. I hear your ambivalence, and I appreciate the call to Radio Times. John, do you know if that statistic is true or not? I read that, but I've also read a lot of conflicting things when it comes to, you know, the sale of wine and liquor.
And that number, I mean, those figures were bandied about during, again, I don't have that statistic committed to memory, but, I mean, that concern was bandied about during floor debate on Monday as well by opponents of this proposal, and refuted by those who, in fact, you know, said what the caller said, that by state, Pennsylvania is among the lowest. You know, right now, there's... If, say, for instance, you're trying to buy beer in Wegmans, you have to present your driver's license no matter how old you are. I mean, I'm just turned 42 and had to pony up my license the other day when I tried to buy some beer. So, you know, that's the argument you get against the that's the hedge against, you know, alcohol getting into the hands of minors.
And I should say to our listeners that we called John Micek up at about 3 minutes after 10 o'clock to join us. So if he doesn't have all those facts and figures right at his fingertips, it's because we called him at the last minute. And we are taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And John, one of the arguments against the current system is that the state is both in a position of regulating the sale of liquor and also making money off the sale of liquor, and whether that's a contradiction or not, I think it depends on where which side you stand on. But that seems to be the argument against the current system.
That is the chapter and verse, in fact, that Mr. Terzai was citing on Monday evening during his sort of opening statement on this debate, that he sees it as a fundamental conflict of interest that Pennsylvania is in the business of selling booze to its citizens and also on the back end enforcing those laws against them. He just does not think that, you know, that's a core mission of state government, that, you know, it's up to the private sector to sell this stuff and then for the state to enforce the violations against the laws.
What is the relation between Mike Terzai, he's the House Majority Leader, and the Senate President Joe Scarnati? As you say, they're both Republicans, but it's interesting that Scarnati has this competing bill that he's co-sponsoring. Tensions between these two?
Show me any big family that gets along on everything
all of the time.
You know, I mean, the Senate has been, since the beginning of this, the Senate has been tremendously ambivalent. This has been very much a House-centered project. And early on, it was because there was some House resistance to the school choice stuff that was starting up in the Senate. The House wasn't as interested in this. And, you know, if one person can't get what they want, they will be less inclined in this business to give somebody else something that they want as well. You know, there have been tensions, and historically there's been tensions between the House and Senate as well. The Senate likes to think of itself as kind of the grown-up chamber, very patrician and serious and doing its thing, and the House is kind of like the unruly kids at the little table in the other room. that's been kicking around for a while.
Let me get Dave from East Falls to join us. And Dave, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, I just wanted to call in to say that while I deeply love the fact that Pennsylvania is getting $400 or $500 million because we need it for all sorts of things, and I certainly support our hardworking state employees, after a lot of deep consideration, I just can't reconcile the fact that the state's government's core competency is governing and not retail sales, and there's really no justification for a state to sell liquor. And that's really all I have to say, except if I'm allowed to comment on a couple of things Maureen from Downingtown said as far as the look of the stores. The one in my neighborhood isn't particularly attractive, and that can be handled with zoning, as can all the other enforcement, underage drinking, etc. Those can be handled through enforcement rather than, you know, state sales. And that's about all I have to say, and I'll take any comments off the air.
Well, Dave, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And I don't know, John, whether you have looked at some statistics about where Pennsylvanians stand on this issue. Where is this? Is there support for privatization?
If you ask the question, you support, you know, depending on how you ask it, there's been general support, broad public support for privatization of the system.
Right.
When you ask it as a question of convenience, people say, I want to be able to buy wine, as that earlier caller said. I want to be able to buy wine in the grocery store. I want to be able to buy wine, spirits in the grocery store, but, you know, beer in the grocery store is kind of a one-stop thing. And I've thought throughout this debate that it's less, that the debate is more about that, about access and ease, than it is about the actual delivery system. Mm-hmm. I'm not as convinced that consumers care whether the system is privately run or state operated, unless you get into a sort of real ideological territory, as they are concerned about, do I have to go to five different places in order to satisfy, you know, the stuff that I need to do? And, you know, that's the argument the LCB has been making also as it's trying to sort of modernize its operations.
And how powerful is this lobby? We'll be talking to Wendell Young in a couple of minutes, but just how much clout do they have, John?
We're talking about the UFCW now.
Yes,
quite,
yes.
I mean, among Democratic circles, quite a lot. I mean, they're one of the primary reasons why this hasn't happened, because Democrats are, they have a close relationship with legislative Democrats, and they listen to what they have to say.
Yeah, and I know, and we're talking about Terzai's bill, which is, of course, still under discussion, but he does talk about help for displaced workers, trying to sort of ease them, I guess, out of that system and into something else. I know that won't fly with them, but seems like he's at least trying to help those that might be displaced if it were privatized.
Mr. Young has been sort of dismissive. There's some language in Mr. Terzai's proposal that would offer tuition assistance, but he says the amount is negligible and wouldn't make a dent in the actual cost of trying to retrain. There's, you know, they would also be given preference in civil service hiring if they chose to stay with the state, and private sector licensees, if should they ever eventually come to pass, would also be offered tax credits to take on displaced employees from the state source system. They argue that, you know, these are the most experienced people, so naturally these private vendors would want to snap them up and bring them into this new universe when it comes to pass.
Let me get Dave from Lansdowne to join us. And Dave, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi, Marty.
Hi.
I was going to say that make a comment that, you know, we all need food and gasoline, food to eat, gasoline to get to work. And neither of those has ruined anyone's lives. But I'm not an alcoholic, but I know them. There are alcoholics out there, and they're told to stay away from people, places, and things. I know when I lived in Florida, I would drive home, stop for gas, see a bottle of beer there, and never thought of getting a beer, but it looked good, and I grabbed it, especially in hot Florida. If it's all about money, well, we need to do the math. If it's about public welfare, I say leave it alone. I don't have a problem getting a beer anywhere right now.
Well, David, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and John, that is the other side as well, which is to not necessarily make it harder for people to buy their spirits or wine or beer, but the concern that availability could lead to problems.
And that's been sort of the refrain from critics of this. You know, Dwight Evans, the state representative from Philadelphia, said that, you know, he's an opponent of this privatization issue, that right now it's really not that hard to get a drink. In Pennsylvania, you know, you can buy some beer from a distributor. You can get, you know, at a bar, or you can go to a state store to get the booze that you need. We're not exactly talking about prohibition here in the state. The sale of alcohol is not unusually restricted or unusually difficult. So, you know, there are some concerns by those who are on the other side of this, who think that if you hand it over to private vendors, that all of a sudden you're going to open the doors to even more ease of use. But you know, there are those who believe that it's not that hard to get a drink right now.
John, I'm asking you to look into your crystal ball, but you've been covering the state legislature for some time now. So where do you think this issue is going to go? And we should add that the legislature is also debating the budget and wants to finish that on time as well.
Well, assuming Mr. Terzai can wrangle the votes he needs today, and they pass this bill, say, next week out of the House, the Senate has said it's not going to take it up until the fall. At the earliest, the variable there is you're in the middle of campaign season. You know, Mr. Terzai's proposal includes a tax increase in the form of this gallonage tax. So the question becomes whether or not lawmakers want to take up a tax increase as they're running for re-election. I've never seen somebody who wants to run on the back of a tax increase. So there's every probability that this issue could dead end in the fall, and if that's the case, a brand new legislature comes into existence at the start of in January 2013, which means all bills in the session die, and it's back to square one, and the whole kit and caboodle begins over again.
Okay, deja vu all over again, right?
Exactly right. We could be having, Marty, you and I could be sitting here in June 2013 having this exact same discussion again.
Well, let's do that, and we'll give you more than 2 minutes to get ready to go on the air with us, John.
Thanks.
And thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times. As always, John Micek, he's the State House reporter for the Allentown Morning Call. He writes the paper's Capital Ideas blog, and we did call him up just a couple of minutes before airtime talking about a plan. We don't know where that plan is going to go necessarily, but a plan to privatize the sale of liquor in the state of Pennsylvania, wine and liquor. And we do have waiting in the wings Wendell Young, the president of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local. He'll be joining us after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY. Focus Features, presenting the new film Moonrise Kingdom, directed by Wes Anderson and starring Bruce Willis, Edward Norton, Bill Murray, Frances McDormand, and Tilda Swinton. Moonrise Kingdom, in select theaters now.
St. Francis Hospital supports WHYY. When a heart attack happens, the faster the blockage can be opened, the less likely permanent heart damage will occur. St. Francis's cardiovascular team has worked to reduce the time it takes to get a patient from the ER to receiving life-saving catheterization procedures to 50 minutes or less, versus the 90-minute national average. More at stfrancishealthcare.org. At St. Francis Hospital in Wilmington, we specialize in you.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Harvard historian Jill Lepore has taken on nothing less than America's thinking on life and death, and she stars with Milton Bradley's Board Game. Also, Jess Walter's new novel, Beautiful Ruins, interweaves Hollywood hype and La Dolce Vita. That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
PNC Bank and the Barnes Foundation support WHYY and welcome visitors to the Barnes in Philadelphia to experience the vast collection of Picassos, Matisses, Renoirs, and Cezannes in their new home. For details on tickets and programs, barnesfoundation.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. On Monday, the Pennsylvania House actually debated the privatization of the Commonwealth's state-owned liquor stores, and that debate was stopped yesterday. There is now some action possibly in the Senate. It's a very fluid issue, but an important one. We're talking about the pros and cons of privatizing the sale of wine and spirits in the state of Pennsylvania. And joining us now is Wendell Young, president of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 1776, representing the 3,500 people who work in the state's wine and spirit stores. And Wendell Young, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Morning, Marty. Nice to talk with you today.
And nice to talk to you as well. And we realize that the Mike Terzai bill, we don't know where it is going, but we know that your organization opposes that bill. On what grounds?
Well, first and foremost, we, as you already said, we represent the 3,500 people statewide who work in the retail stores. The system employs about 5,500 people, and this will cost nearly all of those people, about 5,000 people, their jobs. The system will only need about 300 to 500 people after privatization, mostly administrative enforcement people and clerical folks. And, you know, at a time where our nation is reeling from one of the worst, the worst recession ever, and politicians on both sides of the aisle say that we need more, better jobs, I can't imagine why anybody in this state or anywhere else would want to get rid of 5,000 people who are in decent jobs, who work for a system, unlike popular press perception, that actually makes money. It not only collects 100% of the taxes, hundreds of millions of dollars in taxes, but delivers nearly $100 million in pure profit back to the taxpayers of Pennsylvania after all expenses are paid and carries no debt. It's a valuable public asset. It provides a good balance of revenue, good jobs, and from a public health perspective, we are, since records have been kept for many years now, every year absolutely the lowest death rate related to alcohol consumption anywhere in the nation, and have been every year since that statistic's been kept by our government.
Your organization signed a four-year contract with Governor Corbett, but there seem to be two very different interpretations. Corbett's said that you can't force a private employer to abide by that contract. If the legislature passes a law privatizing the Liquor Control Board, that's the idea of it. It gets the state out of the business, private sector workers, not state workers, with generous benefits, pensions, and wages. It seems you have a very different interpretation of the contract that you just signed.
Well, that's what lawyers and arbitrators and judges will decide in the future if, in fact, the state decides to sell off the system without meeting its obligation, and I mean the state's obligation, under that contract. I think the questions and answers to that are interesting. Fact is, we did just sign a new contract. This language has been in our contract. It dates back to the Casey administration. It's been here for decades. It was originally negotiated by a different administration. And, you know, it doesn't really matter what a political spokesperson says. What matters is what did the parties bargain and And what are the party's obligations under that contract, not somebody's obligation that's not party to it?
So you're saying that if, and I realize this is a great big if, but if the system were privatized, then private companies would be required to hire current employees?
Our contract puts an obligation on the state to make sure that that happens. You clearly heard from the spokespeople for Terzai and the governor's office that they disagree. Fact is, the contract has 3 more years left on it. It would take a few years to unwind the system if they did privatize it today. And it would take a year or two or three to litigate these issues. So I don't think the language provides any greater job security in the end result. If they decide to sell the system, you know, it would be winding down and implementing around the same time the contract would expire. My point was really, when I made the point, it was in response to questions from legislators and media who have known about this language for many years, that it's kind of odd that, you have this debate going on at a time where it was clear to any observers the Senate, and just heard John Micek talk about this, the Senate really doesn't want to deal with this right now. Mm. The governor certainly wants privatization, but has been focused on other issues, and just settled a contract with us, which really kind of puts the issue off a few years. In my opinion, my point was, why is Mike Terzai pushing for a vote now that doesn't seem realistic by anybody who's really paying attention to the details? Why is he putting his members in his own caucus on the firing line to deal with this at a time where it looks like he couldn't do it for a few years anyway?
And
that was just my opinion.
Well, I hear you. That's in part why you're here. Can you tell us where you are? Because it's very, very noisy.
No, I'm sorry. I'm in a parking garage because there's about 100 people waiting to get through the Capitol scanner, and I couldn't get to a quiet inside office.
No, it's fine. I just wanted to make sure our listeners knew what was going on around you. And again, Wendell Young, our guest in this final portion of Radio Times. He's the president of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 1776. He represents the 3,500 people who work in the state's wine and spirit stores. And we are talking about the pros and cons of privatizing the liquor control system here in the state of Pennsylvania. I do want to get to our callers. In fact, let me get, it looks like Jim from Exton to join our conversation. And Jim, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
My comment is that if the legislature is unable to pass legislation to privatize the industry, it'll demonstrate to all the citizens of the state the inability of the legislature to act on the behalf of the citizen, but to kowtow to private interests, lobbyists, and once again deny to the people of Pennsylvania their will. I'll take my comment off the air. Thank you very much for taking my call.
You're very welcome, Jim. No. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. And Wendell, that is one of the arguments. I mean, there are people in this state who want a privatized system.
Well, sure there are. And if you ask the simple question, do you want privatization versus not, as often the newspapers do ask it, clearly, some of the pollsters have done it with one or two questions on a poll, build in with a whole bunch of other questions, it usually comes out somewhere north of 50% of people say they want privatization. Right. But those polls that have been done that dig deeper into the respondents' reasons have little to do with wine and spirits, and based on the misconception that they think that the system loses money and costs taxpayers money. I mean, just think about what happened. We have Mike Terzai this past Monday night went before his chamber. It was aired on PCN Live and repeated the same stuff he's repeating a year and a half now, that the liquor system is losing money, and he actually shows a deficit number. It's completely untrue. He's actually made the numbers up. We have an auditor general in Pennsylvania that has clarified this in the past. There was extensive testimony last year.
I think we might have lost Wendell Young. Let's see if we can call him back and get him back on the line. And a very interesting first hour today on Radio Times. Guests that bailed on us at the last minute, John Micek joining us at the last minute. And we just lost Wendell Young, president of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 1776. And it's our discussion about the pros and cons of privatizing the state liquor store system. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Wendell, do we have you back? No, we don't seem to have him back. Let's get Hello? James. Wendell, is that you?
Yes, as I don't know exactly where I lost you, but as I was saying, the system continues to produce ever-increasing profits and taxes at a time where Mike Terzai is trying to convince people it's losing money and putting out false and not only misleading, but outright false information. Last year, it reported its greatest profit ever, and it grows at about the rate of 4 to 6% a year in both tax revenue collected and profits. So when voters have responded to these polls, it's often based on that misconception. When polls have been done, and I've done one using a Republican polling group just this past year, offer both what the proponents say and the other information about the profitability of the system, the numbers nearly reverse. So, you know, misinformation, when you have newspapers who want the advertising dollars, they're writing editorials constantly saying we ought to privatize it because it's losing money, according to Mike Terzai, and then run a poll in the same edition saying, do you want to privatize? And of course the voters are saying that because they've been given the wrong information.
And have the employees or your members of your union, did they get customer service training?
They did, and, you know, this is, again, I think this is a great example of Mike Terzai doesn't know what he doesn't know. It is very common in service sector industries, banks, hotels, restaurants, retail, that they offer this training, and the better companies offer it more often. In fact, Disney, the Disney company, has what's considered the best customer service training on the planet, where companies from all around the world send their management crews, rank-and-file employees. Now, the PLCB did something very smart. They hired the same kind of firm that does the same kind of training for a lot less money. And I think it was very effective, and I supported it. They came to me early on and said, what do you think of this? You know, I deal with a lot of retailers. I deal with a lot of service sector employers as a union representative, and the best ones employ this kind of training. I applauded their effort.
Let me get Linda from Downingtown to join our conversation. And Linda, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead, Linda.
I think that it would be great for the state of Pennsylvania and the consumers if they would privatize this industry. It would give people an opportunity to be able to get boutique wines through the purveyors if they wanted to. A gentleman earlier said something about the contract with the state employees being out there again for another 3 or 4 years, mm-hmm. and those people might have to be absorbed into the privatization sales force. Part of the problem is they aren't knowledgeable.
They don't
know what they're selling. People go in and ask questions, and they have no clue. Granted, they've gotten better, and the selections have gotten better, but maybe they could be trained to be a little more knowledgeable about the wines and get some of these jobs that the privatization industry is going to be giving. And, we would get a better wine selection. The state's not going to lose any money. I mean, so many people I know that are looking for boutique wines go into Delaware and Maryland.
Well, Linda, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and let me give you a chance to respond to that, Wendell Young. The idea that employees, they're not knowledgeable enough.
Well, I let me point something out. First of all, nationwide, you can pick any state where privatization occurs. There's very few what I would call premium boutique shops. Most of the market licenses are gobbled up in private states by big box stores, Costco, Walmart, Target, folks like that. And if you think a part-time employee who makes about $8 an hour with little or no pension or benefits and with high turnover rates is going to be, who might be running a cash register or baking bakery products at any part of the day or stocking shelves, is going to be more knowledgeable than our premium collection stores or employees in our regular stores, well, I think they're kidding themselves. Now, if you want to pick out unique stores in certain states, I think that they're on par with our private premium collection stores and the employees in the regular stores who have gone through that same kind of training. So overall, across the board, I think we have more people per capita trained better. Now, what the effect on the consumer is going to be, you don't have to take my word for it. Just look at all the headlines coming out of Washington State. Anybody can Google them. It's been a nightmare in the 2 weeks since they've privatized. Prices are up 15 to 35%. Collections down. The private sector that took over does not have those trained staffs that she's talking about. And by the way, the same thing happened in West Virginia when they privatized, the last one before Washington to do it. And the same thing's happened in Iowa. Over 90% of all the licenses in West Virginia, Iowa, Washington State are large chain retailers who employ mostly part-timers who are just stocking liquor in addition to the milk, cookies, and other things. They are not trained professionals. They are not experts. here in Pennsylvania, we had testimony last year where I brought two of our rank-and-file employees in. It was very impressive before the House Liquor Committee. And I think one of them made an excellent point. He works at Rob Peters, who works at our Ardmore store. He's our wine specialist there, one of many statewide. British Airways, who since the advent of food and beverage service on airplanes has been the most award-winning airline for its food and beverage service, they could pick any place in the planet to select their transatlantic offerings. They go to the PLCB. They go to Rob Peters, one of my members, who selects for British Airways first-class service the wines that they're going to offer. It doesn't get any better than that.
Well, we're almost out of time here, but I'm thinking about those people who go across the border to get a better deal. It may not be the kind of a personal deal that our caller Linda was talking about, but they get a better deal in New Jersey or Delaware.
Well, I'll comment on that very quickly.
Please
do. We're running out of time. There was extensive testimony offered not only by me, but others, including a guy named Nate Wachinski, who's a wine spirits expert and a pro-privatization person, before last year's hearings, that showed that actually the prices in border states aren't better. The selection's not better. The only state you get a better price on most items is going to be Delaware, because there's no state taxes on alcohol, just like there isn't for anything else. And you're not going to be able to compete with that unless Mike Terzai's talking about eliminating taxes on alcohol altogether. Now, as far as the price comparisons, don't take my word for it. Most of those price comparisons have been done by newspapers who favor privatization. They've showed that Pennsylvania has better selection, lower prices on more items. And when it comes to selection and what goes on in Delaware at stores like Total Wine and Liquors, I think you can take Jonathan Newman, who is a pro-privatization person's word on it. There's quotes from him that go back years. I'm paraphrasing. I don't have them in front of me. I entered them in testimony last year where he talked about this. Most of what people are being offered is stuff that was bought at a discount because it wasn't selling. It doesn't sell in Pennsylvania because it's just not that good, and they dump it because they make good price margins on it. And that Pennsylvania's wine and spirit selections are vetted better. The quality offerings are better because they use their volume purchasing to get a better product that they can offer at a lower price.
Well, on that note, we have to say goodbye to you, and thank you, Wendell Young, for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You too, and bye-bye. And he's the president of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 1776, representing the 3,500 people who work in the state's wine and spirit stores. And we had hoped to begin our conversation with Mike Terzai, the House Majority Leader, and that didn't happen. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. It didn't happen, even though we made numerous phone calls during the hour to get him on the air. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out more about this program, and you can also join our conversation talking about the pros and cons of privatization. I'm Artie Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back.